This time on Weather Brains, changes are ahead for the severe weather warnings we receive from the National Weather Service.
I was a little bit wary at first when I first heard the news, but now I am getting more and more encouraged by it.
So what will the enhanced format mean for you and me? Kevin Selly gets the answers.
They're not going to blow up, quote unquote, the old system. They want it to definitely evolve.
Also this time, get ready to answer a few easy questions.
It is the very first ever online Weather Brains listener survey.
Plus, the Weather Brains crew is stumped about a certain kind of tree. Is it true that they have a foul odor? On This Week in Weather History, we look at a time when it was unacceptable to use the word tornado in weather forecasts. Bill Murray has that. And just in case you haven't sampled the incredible variety of podcasts on the internet lately, we'll do that for you. It's all coming up. Welcome to episode 59 of Weather Brains, the netcast that is all about the weather, produced by The Weather Company. I'm David Black. With me for this episode, Kevin Selly, Dallas, Texas. Kev, how are you? What are you doing? What's new?
David, I am fantastic. The Bradford pear trees are in full bloom here in Texas, and that means that spring is taking hold, and I'm very pleased by that. I'm also very pleased, if I may for a moment, mention the new thing we're doing today. It is the very first ever online Weather Brains listener survey, and I'm very excited because we want to make the show as good as we possibly can for everybody who listens, so we'd like some input from you. And if you would, just take a moment to go to weatherbrains.com, and we'll have the link there for you to the online survey. It's very short. It's just a couple of questions, but it'll help us make the show better for you. And I can tell you that my wife took the survey yesterday very, very quickly, and it took her all of, if you can believe this, 1 minute and 27 seconds, David.
So on the first question, is the first question, should we get rid of David Black, and what did Tracy say?
Actually, the very first question was from JB. He wanted to know if Brian Peters does, in fact, own all of the KFC franchise outlets.
Well, the next time Brian's with us, we'll find out about that. Bill Murray also with us, as well as JB Elliott. How you doing, man?
I'm not doing as good as Kevin, but I'm doing okay. I'm doing fine.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Glad you're kicking anyway. Hey, I've got something to ask you about right off the bat, Kevin. You mentioned the Bradford pears really coming out in Texas. Yeah. Somebody, and I honestly don't remember who, but somebody was just talking about this with me a day or two back. Is it true that they have a foul odor?
David, I don't understand this because I have lived here for a long time, and I'm glad that you actually brought this up because I don't recall ever smelling that. But my wife came in from a walk the other day with a friend of hers, and they were just in shock and disbelief because apparently it smelled so bad outside. I mean, apparently they described it as, well, for lack of a better term, dog poop.
Well,
and they were trying to figure out what it was, and so they asked somebody else in the neighborhood, and he said, oh, no, it's the Bradford pear tree. So what do you know about it?
Well, it may have been my wife or somebody. JB, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but I've got two. The only two trees we have in our yard, in the backyard, is two large Bradford pears, and I have never smelled anything. Maybe it's little Miss Molly I'm smelling.
No, I don't think so. My wife or somebody was saying that they have a reputation for looking beautiful, but they have a nasty, foul odor, and I took a shower today, so I don't think it's me.
I sure haven't noticed that. I have never heard about them smelling.
It only lasted a very short time here. Now, maybe if somebody knows, maybe they can send us a note.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, that's
actually,
a good
you
idea.
Know what? They could go to the website, which is weatherbrains.com, and send us a note there. There's an email contact. But you know what else is at weatherbrains.com, David?
What would that be, Kev?
That would be the listener survey that we would love to have everyone go and just take a couple of seconds and fill out the online listener survey at weatherbrains.com. And if you'll let me, I might mention that once or twice more as the program.
Oh, it's just a family here. We'll just have fun and mention it as much as we like. But it would be nice to get somebody who's a an expert in such arboreal subjects as yes. Bradford pears to enlighten us and tell me if I'm imagining that or if what the deal is with that. But spring, nonetheless is starting to show its gorgeous head around the east and southeastern states as well as other parts of the country. And sure is nice because we sure have had a pretty cold winter at times. The northern plains. Folks up in the northern U.S., man, I think they've just been pounded over this past winter, and I suspect they will be glad as well to see temperatures rising and the sun coming out and no more wind chills below whatever, and power outages and ice-coated lines and all that kind of jazz.
And now it's swung the other way. I noticed as we're speaking, it's around 71 along the North Dakota-South Dakota border, and there were at least 19 Southern California locations that had record highs today.
I wonder if that's an indicator of things to come or if there's just no way to tell.
I don't know, but the water shortage, well, the rainfall shortage in California, especially in Central and Southern California, is severe. Only 2.11 inches since last July 1st in Bakersfield. That's only about 20% of normal.
Wow.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's kind of nice, though, I think, for most of the country to have fairly tranquil weather after all the violent storms that pushed through the southern U.S. in the past couple of weeks. So I think everybody kind of wanted a breather. I feel, too, for all the folks who have to work at putting their lives back together and clean up and try to get going with things. With the tragic tornado that struck Enterprise, Alabama, March 1st, many other similar cases we could talk about, some of which we've discussed on this show, more folks are realizing how important it is. We talk about this a lot. More people, though, are really learning firsthand how important it is to have a way to hear severe weather warnings when they're issued by the National Weather Service. Now, later this year, some enhancements are coming to how those warnings are going to be worded and presented. Kevin, you've been looking into this now. What's this all about?
Yeah, David, I have. In some ways, it's a really huge change to the way warnings are issued, and in some ways, it's really not. But the National Weather Service believes it has found a more useful way to make warning information available to the public, and the answer to that question, that need, takes effect this fall.
On October 1st, the National Weather Service is making some changes to the warning system. And when you hear that, many people might think, uh-oh, this might not be a good thing. But Mike Looney, who is chief of the Services Division, Kansas City, tells us not to worry and first explains what warnings will be affected.
Well, the National Weather Service will move from county-based warnings to storm-based warnings for tornadoes, severe thunderstorms, flash floods, and special marine warnings, which would be the extension of a severe thunderstorm over water.
The enhancements, and we'll not call them changes, which I'll explain in a few moments, involve moving to storm-based warnings using polygons rather than counties. And we should define the use of the term polygon.
Well, a polygon would be a multi-sided box. It wouldn't necessarily that describes the area in this case. You could have a triangle, which would have 3 points. You could have a square or a parallelogram that would have 4 points. You could have an odd-shaped polygon. So,
as opposed to a county.
And opposed to a county.
Okay.
Yes.
The current county-based warning system was developed in the 1960s and used counties because at that time, largely because of the available distribution methods, it was the best and really only way to do it. Now, at this point, it is important to understand the current system is not being abandoned.
You would still get the warnings over weather radio. You still get the warnings over commercial radio. But because the forecaster will be describing a smaller area, it will give the opportunity to be more precise in describing that area using landmarks, highways, rivers.
As technology has advanced and it has become easier to deliver pictures or visuals over TV, the internet, cell phones, PDAs, and the like, the Weather Service is taking advantage of technology to more specifically define an area to be affected by severe weather rather than just flagging an entire county. And because they can now use things like GPS, users of the enhanced data, like the OnStar system, for example, can do some interesting things with that data.
Let's say we send a warning, and OnStar picks up 4 vertices of a polygon. They could easily then transmit to their customers when you're driving into or out of a warned area. Much easier to describe those 4 points than try to describe an entire county.
In some western states, counties are the size, in some cases, of a small state. And in testing performed by the Weather Service across the country, the size of the warned areas were reduced by an average of 70%. So if you are warning for a smaller, more specific area, technically fewer people are affected by a given warning. But then we wanted to know if, since storms move, does that mean more warnings, keeping in mind that your NOAA weather radio is still going to go off for your selected counties? Well, tests were done across the country, and
the customer, surprisingly, there was very little feedback as to a perceptible increase in the number of warnings. It was almost like, well, no big deal, not much difference at all. So it doesn't appear to be a real problem. The issues, there's some communication issues that have to be worked out, smoothed out with emergency managers, because there'll be times when they actually will have multiple warnings in their county, and they have to understand how to separate one from another.
There will be a change to the base information. It will be more descriptive to specific areas using landmarks referenced in the text of the warning that you read on your computer, hear on weather radio, or see crawling across your television screen.
The difference you would see would be in the text, obviously, would be a more descriptive definition of where the threat is, rather than the whole county. In other words, it might say Dallas and Tarrant County, north of Interstate 20.
So there will be specific landmarks referenced, but the Weather Service is allowing for two very important things with the rollout of the new system: local flexibility and evolution.
We're not going to prescribe that you have to use a highway or you have to use this marker, because it's simply different in different parts of the country. Highways will be there, obviously well-known communities will be there, rivers would be there, it could be a national monument, it could be Mount Rushmore or something. You know, it has to have some agility added to it. So we're not going to require specifics. We're going to have a suite there for folks. You know, here's what we think would be descriptive, but you as the resident experts need to decide.
Different users will have different applications for the polygon warnings. One example comes from Minneapolis and the meteorologist who works with Northwest Airlines.
When there's a tornado warning issued for the county where Minneapolis resides, the Northwest Airlines has procedures that they have to enact for their ground crews and so forth, which makes good sense. And he says, please move forward with storm-based approach, because if the tornado is in the southeast part of the county, if the warning's in the southeast part of the county, I'll no longer have to enact these procedures. That saves me dollars.
And another example from Arkansas.
John Robinson is the warning coordination meteorologist in Little Rock, and he visited with Walmart. And Walmart says, this is great stuff, because now if there is a tornado warning for a county, we send message to the stores and they do this. Now, if there's only a tornado warning for a third of the county, let's say, we can now send that information to those stores only, and that's a resource issue for them.
And in Kansas City, bet you never thought about this one.
The zoo, the Kansas City Zoo, if there's a tornado warning for the county, they have to do certain things, like lock up the lions first, sort of thing, you know. So, and if it's in 2 a.m, they gotta rally the troops and get out there and do this and that or whatever.
So, at the end of the day, the Weather Service believes warning for an area rather than a county simply makes more sense for the public and the forecasters issuing the warnings.
There's a couple of reasons why, in the period since, it's better to go with storm-based, because it's more efficient to the forecaster. They're not having to be concerned do I go ahead and include this county or take out this county? In theory, you should sit down and issue your warning based on the threat and not the artificial boundary.
And remember, actually, no real change unless you want it.
And if you hadn't paid close attention to the warning text, you might not tell any difference. Now, if you pay attention to the graphics, what you will now see coming from the National Weather Service is no longer polygons that look like counties, no replication of the counties. You'll actually see the threat areas depicted. So that's a change, but it's a refinement more than it is a change.
So there you have it, guys. This really is going to be one of the important things is to know that it's going to be an evolution. They're not making wholesale changes to the old system. At the end of the day, if you want to sit in your house and listen for your NOAA weather radio to go off for your particular county, you can still do that. It's still going to do it. It's an enhancement, especially with regard to the visuals. And I had a bunch of questions that I also asked him and that were sent to me by all of the WeatherBrains crew, and I can go back to some of those, but David or JB, if you've got any questions right now, maybe I can try and answer them a little bit.
Okay, if you live near the Cotton Bowl, one of the main differences is going to be just hearing references to those specific locations as opposed to a more generic west of the county type of thing. Is that the real thrust of this?
Well, and I wanted to know that too. And one of the things that they said, that he said specifically, was that at this point in time and at rollout, they are going to try not to get that specific. I asked the same question you did in a little different way. I said, okay, well, what about the mall that's near my house? And he said, especially at rollout, that's likely not going to happen. It's a little too specific. Now, one of the things they're also doing is they're going to allow for each individual office, since they are the local experts on their areas, to eventually use those type of landmarks if they think it's important. So in my example, the mall, probably not. In your example, the Cotton Bowl, since everybody knows where that is, yeah, that might be a legitimate landmark, but they're not at the early stages going to go down to that fine a detail, I think, David.
Okay, because they really want to keep it more recognizable for everybody.
Bigger landmarks, sections of counties, sections or north or south of a major artery, a well-known river, that type of thing. And again, it would be up to the local experts in each weather service office.
Okay.
But the county name would be early on in the warning, would it not? At least some part of that county?
Yes. In theory, what you're going to have, if you have two counties that sit right next to each other in a storm moving from west to east, in the polygon warning, the NOAA weather radio is going to go off for both of those counties. But visually, if you're looking online, or eventually you're looking on your cell phone, or even you're in your car, technically, if, say, the storm is moving across the, is going to move across the southern half of those two counties, technically you're not in the warned area under the polygon for that warning. But your NOAA weather radio is still going to go off because they recognize that that's a system that has worked for well for a number of years. So it is going to go off if you're in the northern part of those counties. And so at that point, if you want to go for more information, you can go online and look at the text. You can turn on the television. You can listen to the warning, the text, what is read to you over the radio. But technically, in that example, if you're in the northern part, you would not be under the warning from the polygon, but your radio is still going to go off, JB. Does that answer the question?
Yes, and so the polygon would be changing shape fairly often.
They could, yes, and that's something that they also recognize is going to evolve. If they find that polygons are too small, such that they're issuing them too frequently, they'll encourage them to be a little bigger. If they find that they're too big and warning for too large an area, then they'll try and make some adjustments and work it back down. So it sounds a little unsettling at first, but the longer you listen and then the more that you realize that they are willing to evolve this thing and that it is flexible, it sounds like it's going to be a lot better, especially with regard to that evolution, JP.
I'm becoming more and more in favor of it. My initial concern when I first heard the news was that a slight change in direction of the tornado or a speed up could change, would meet another new warning would have to be issued quickly.
Yes, and that is something that, especially in areas where, let's take an specific example, you get, you know, storms that turn into a right turner or something, which I assume is what you're talking about. Those types of things are going to have to be accounted for with regard to the local office and the person on duty, and those are things that they will monitor. But early on, is that a possibility? I would say yes, that it probably is, and so they're going to watch that very closely.
And that's something I wondered about, if there would be a higher chance of multiple warnings within a given county because of that. Maybe they're looking at that, though.
Yeah, in the testing that they did, and actually some offices like the Fort Worth office, and I guess I'm not sure of all the Alabama offices, but they've actually been doing this online for some period of time, and then they did some official testing prior to the launch, and their records and their perception was that there was not an appreciable notice as far as an increase in the number of warnings from the users. But that is something that they are aware of, because you don't want to get into a cry wolf situation where it's just warning after warning after warning and people become numb to it. So they're
right.
They're aware of that, and they want to take careful steps to prevent that.
Thanks, Kevin. Interesting piece. And I suppose, too, we should say one more time, just for anybody who might not be totally clear on this involves no change whatsoever to setting up your weather radio. If you've got one of those, you just keep on trucking like you've been. Nothing changes there.
That's exactly right. Your weather radio, if you have the same technology which allows you to pick your counties, or if you don't have one that has that technology, either way, starting October 1st, that is still going to go off, which is actually another interesting point, because technically, if your radio goes off, the storm's in the southern part of the county and you live in the northern part of the county, technically, you may not be under the warning. So that's something that people are going to have to adapt to.
Okay. Well,
that's so one thing that's going to be, will need to be clarified very clearly early on, because that, you know, that could cause mass confusion.
JB,
yes.
You worked for the National Weather Service many years, and I wouldn't even venture a guess as to how many severe weather warnings you wrote that were sent out to the public. What would you think of using this enhanced format if you were working there now?
I would be in favor of it. I'm beginning, I was a little bit wary at first when I first heard the news, but now I am getting more and more encouraged by it and anxious to see it work. I feel like it will take the National Weather Service maybe a year to really shake out all the stuff that needs to be shaken out and to really refine it.
Yeah, which is another reason that they're not going to blow up, quote-unquote, the old system. They want it to definitely evolve. There were a couple of other questions. Bill Murray had sent in some questions before I did the interview, and I just wanted to address those very quickly. He was wondering about false alarm ratios and probability of detection. I asked about that, and it's kind of interesting because when you start looking at it as from a data standpoint, you want to talk about false alarm rates and things like that. The new system compared to the old one, it's kind of tough to make that comparison. It's almost an apples and oranges type of thing. Technically, if you warn based on this polygon, well, in some ways, because you've done it for the polygon as opposed to for a county, it's always going to verify, if that makes sense. So as far as false alarm rates with regard to the old way of doing it, there's going to have to be sort of a new standard put in place. And so I wanted to just address that since Bill asked it. And he also asked about the new digital emergency activation system. That is not up and running as of yet. And Mr. Looney said that that's going to be more part of Homeland Security as opposed to the National Weather Service. So I wanted to make that point as well. And Jason wanted to know, where are they getting the database points from? Are they going to go down to the mall? That kind of a thing. And the software within the system that does this is pretty customizable. So they can put in the mall if they want to on a local basis. So the answer is they can get that data from wherever they want, and the individual offices can put it in and use it however they want based upon what they think are their needs, because they're the local experts, guys.
Betty, good. Thank you, sir.
Hey, JB.
Yes.
Did you hear about the online user survey?
Yes.
I just want to make sure, because it's at weatherbrains.com, just in case you didn't know. Yeah, I want to make that point.
Don't forget about that now.
You heard about it, David.
I think I heard about it. Well, I might even go and fill it out, but I'm still wondering about question number one. I've got to check that out, but anyway. All right, we're going to make a pretty big change in direction here and kind of transition a little bit from weather to something that I thought might be kind of fun. Before we do that, I think I failed to say where James Spann is. A lot of folks like to listen to Weather Brains and hear James Spann. Kevin, is it your information that he has been able to post bail yet, or is he still having to try to come up with the cash, and that's why he's not here?
Actually, it's my information that he is not here because he's filling out the online listener survey
of course,
weatherbrains.com, in case no one had heard about that.
Okay.
So you can do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the official story is that he's on assignment and will probably be back with us next episode. But I just kind of wonder if he's not like one of those defensive driving schools having to, you know, work off his driving points or something. But, you know, we try to trash everybody equally here. So anything's possible.
We'll find out.
If you listen to Weather Brains, which we strongly suspect you are at the moment, you've already discovered some of the incredible array of content available on the internet. But if you ever listen to just your standard few shows each week, maybe you kind of get into a routine, it becomes easy to miss some of what's really out there. So I thought we'd have a little bit of fun. There is a lot out there. It's all free, and it's all available with the click of a mouse. Now, sampling every podcast out there, well, I have a feeling that would take more time than just about anybody has. But, some of us at Weather Brains have too much spare time on our hands. So what happens when David Black goes exploring on the web to answer the question, Wonder if there's a podcast about this or that. Well, you wind up with a montage of podcasts about everything you can imagine and everything you can't.
For today's pro tip, I'm going to start with a question. If I was going to give you $1,000 to tell me what club in your bag could you make the most solid contact with the golf ball, what club would you choose? The answer is your putter.
Let's talk a little bit about mushrooms, because this recipe has just an assortment of mushrooms. You can use button mushrooms, you can use shiitakes or portobellos or oysters, whatever kind you want.
And we're going to be talking a little bit in this discussion about PhotoLab.
I'm going to be talking about a recent conference that I attended. It was the 7th annual Herzliya Conference on the Balance of Israel's National Security, and the topic was media as the theater of war.
Welcome to the old-time Radio Network comedy. We now go back to the early days of radio comedy and our imaginations.
Mother, is Maxwell House really the only coffee in the world?
Well, your father says so, and your father knows best.
It's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as Father. Brought to you by America's favorite coffee, Maxwell House.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Photoshop Quick Tips Podcast.
Today we'll be talking about making one of the staples of Italian cooking, which is spaghetti sauce.
Zencast.
Free and easy, take two.
Welcome to this mini relaxation break. Begin by sitting comfortably and then close your eyes. Take a moment to simply become aware of what's being experienced right now.
Welcome to NPR's Story of the Day, the one thing NPR editors think you won't want to miss.
You're listening to Coffee Break Spanish,
the show which brings you language with your latte.
With Coffee Break Spanish, you're going to be learning to speak and understand the language.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News.
Welcome to the third episode of the Wood Whisperer video podcast. Now today we're going to cover a topic that can be frustrating, perplexing, dangerous, and extremely rewarding all at the same time, and that's refinishing.
The key to crisp napkin folds is to start with a stiffly starched napkin. Solid colors work best for this fold. Start with a square flat napkin with the backside up, and fold the four corners in to meet at the center.
To help somebody psychologically, to help somebody to move forward, we have to live in the moment. He likes this. The most important part is that I did not cause more pain in his life. My goal was to create peace, relaxation, trust, respect. That was my goal.
This is a download from the BBC. To find out more, visit bbcworldservice.com.
For all its breathtaking beauty, Martinique is also the site of the deadliest volcanic eruption in history, outside of Indonesia's Tamboro and Krakatau
disasters. Welcome once again to Advice on Scrapbooking, Design, and Photography.
Hello there, this is Max Pearson with the World Today Select. Coming up, the lengths to which tobacco companies go to keep smokers hooked.
On this week's show, we're going to talk about what few parents want to talk about, overweight kids.
It's time for your Daily Breakfast with Father Roderick, episode 234.
Hey everybody, it's Father Roderick and you're listening to the Daily Breakfast. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Yesterday, we had terrible rain in the Netherlands. Today, we have the worst storm in 4 years.
Welcome to Kinky Sex Radio.
One, two, three, ah!
Kinky Sex Radio is a discussion between an amateur and a professional from the world of kink and BDSM.
Here now is the Iraq Study Group's report.
This is TWIT, This Week in Tech. They're back from Vegas, our prodigals have returned, and now it's time to talk CES.
Thank you for joining us. You're listening to the Better Health Talk Radio program.
Our guest today is Amadeo Babbo of Amalex Herbal Formulas.
Mafioso, directed by Alberto Lattuada, is an Italian film from 1962 that, like many half-forgotten European masterpieces, is enjoying a welcome revival thanks to Rialto Pictures.
Here's Carla Baranakis with a summary of the front page of the New York Times.
We're going to create a seducer. I'm going to take some red thread, wrap it up and down the hook. I'm going to take two feathers and lay them on top of one another.
Hello, and welcome to Escape Pod. The subject was electronic versus print markets.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Geek Food. Geek Food number 7.
Something smells good.
Yeah.
This week on the Medicast episode 49, I wrap up with part 2 of my series on patient transfer issues. Plus, I'll cover news and commentary and a whole lot more here at the Medicast.
Welcome to the Dragon Page with Class.
Welcome back to part 2 of Understanding Democracy and Representation. I wanted to begin by just laying a fact out that there are basically two kinds of democracies that have existed throughout the history of the world.
A grand experiment in human society, I remember your words. True, that was the original plan. But now you tell me, a single faction needs it? The whole moon?
I do love food. I like to eat late at night, too. You know, you're not supposed to eat late at night. And then again, you're not supposed to drink booze in the morning.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Show Outcast 27. Today I have an interview with author Mike Resnick.
In Russian, sambo means self-defense without a weapon. We go to New York Combat Sambo to find out more about this grappling art developed in the former Soviet Union.
The Pantheon is the Roman monument holding the greatest number of records, the best preserved, with the biggest brick dome in the history of architecture, and is considered the forerunner of all modern places of worship. It is the most copied and imitated of all ancient works.
Art et littérature, c'est la chronique de Charles Dantzig et l'émission de Constance Chaillet, Mazarine Pinjot et Pierre de Villeneuve, partout, tout le temps.
Okay, it's recording now.
Oh, should we start then?
Sure.
Okay. Well, our subject is the ion engine, and we're going to explain how it operates and how it benefits astronomy.
Ah, yes. If you're listening to this podcast, you want to know a little something about ion engines, or you missed where you're supposed to go.
Scanning. Exposure correction. Color control. Filters. Sharpening. It's the Secrets of Digital Imaging Audio Magazine.
Welcome to Get Real, the real estate investing show for the rest of us. And on this week's show, we're going to be talking with Mark Habscheid about investing in the Go Zone, which is the hurricane-ravaged area down in the Gulf.
And there you have it. I'd have to say there is literally something for everybody on the internet. Never gets bored.
Wow.
Did you guys, either of you guys, have any idea about the lady who was talking about the seducer and the feathers, what that was about? It wasn't dirty. It was clean.
I did
no
not.
No comment.
You did, JB?
I did not.
Oh, okay. Fly fishing. Lures. Just everything in the world out there. Anyway, just
wow.
Never gets boring on the internet.
Was there a podcast available for online surveys?
That's a good idea. How would we find out? Where would we go to find that out?
One could go to weatherbrains.com and fill out the listener survey so that we could make the program better for you. I just mentioned that.
Yeah, what was that site again?
That's weatherbrains.com.
Okay, good idea. I have to try that out. This is a week many folks across the eastern United States vividly remember for what happened back in 1993. I'll bet you do, JB.
I'm afraid I do, sir.
You remember, Kev?
A little bit, yeah.
So do I. We relive that amazing time with Bill Murray, who brings us This Week in Weather History.
Let's look back at some interesting weather history for the week of March 13th through the 19th. The Great Blizzard of 93, also known as the March 93 Superstorm,
Some people just called it the storm of the century, clobbered the eastern United States back on March 12th through the 13th in 1993. The storm is remarkable not only for its intensity, but for the wide area it affected, all the way from the Gulf Coast to New England, with over 28 states impacted. Heavy snow fell all the way from the Gulf Coast into New England, 13 inches at Birmingham, Alabama. That's a record. Mount LeConte in Tennessee recorded an incredible 60 inches, with thundersnow reported all the way from Texas to Pennsylvania. Many areas were paralyzed for up to 3 days. Meanwhile, in the warm sector of the storm system, an outbreak of tornadoes and a powerful storm surge affected Florida. The central pressure in the storm bottomed out at an amazing 960 millibars as it crossed the Chesapeake Bay. That's as strong as a strong Category 2 hurricane. Damages totaled $6 billion, making it the costliest extratropical storm in U.S. history, and a total of 208 people died. It was back on March 14, 1870, that the term blizzard was coined by a newspaper in Easterville, Iowa, as a major snowstorm struck Iowa and Minnesota. Back on March 16, 1942, the town of Baldwin, Mississippi was hit by two tornadoes just 35 minutes apart as a family of tornadoes tore through the Mississippi Delta. A total of 63 people died. Many of the injured from the tornado at Baldwin were taken to a hospital in Grenada, which was barely missed by another tornado a couple of hours later. And it was back on March 17, 1952, when the official ban on the word tornado in Weather Bureau forecasts finally came to an end after 52 years. That was when the Severe Local Storms Unit in Kansas City issued its first tornado forecast. We know them today as tornado watches. And finally, back on March 18, 1925, the infamous Tri-State Tornado raced 219 miles across Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. It is a storm of superlatives, including the longest continuous path link in U.S. history, the deadliest single tornado in U.S. history, 689 people died, the most tornado fatalities ever at a single U.S. city from one tornado, that was 234 at Murfreesboro, Illinois, and the longest time on the ground, 3 hours and 29 minutes. That's this week in weather history. David?
Thank you very much, Bill Murray. Tell you what, guys, can you imagine not being allowed to use the word tornado in weather coverage reporting?
What do you think about that, JB?
Yes, I pretty much remember when we did not have tornado watches and tornado warnings, but there were times when the district forecaster would send us a telegram that conditions were favorable, but that was before the days of actual warnings.
Wow. Unbelievable. Anyway, how times have changed, and many times for the better. Next time on Weather Brains, another dire prediction is coming from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, as you may have heard it. That's the UN group releasing reports on the anticipated harmful effects of global warming. The Associated Press has released a draft of a report the IPCC is expected to release next month. Now, this report predicts that in coming decades, hundreds of millions of people won't have enough water, tens of millions of others will be flooded out of their homes, tropical diseases like malaria will spread. By the year 2050, the only polar bears you'll see will be in zoos, and by 2080, hundreds of millions of people could face starvation. Well, one scientist who has plenty to say about global warming predictions like the IPCC's has been receiving death threats over a column he wrote in early February.
We're forming policy based on both fear, because, of course, the Chicken Little, the sky is falling, nature of humanity, and also the playing on the lack of understanding about weather and climate.
That's Tim Ball, an environmental consultant and one of Canada's first PhDs in climatology. We'll talk with him next time about what he calls, quote, the greatest deception in the history of science. We hope you can join us. If you'd like to contact the Weather Geeks at Weather Brains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. And we've got a toll-free number you may use to say hey, 1-888-247-8627. That's 888-247-8627. A reminder that the opinions expressed here on Weather Brains are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. And some of the music provided during this netcast came from the Podshow Podsafe Music Network online at music.podshow.com. For the Weather Brains crew, Kevin Selly, Bill Murray, JB Elliott, And we'll have Jane Spann out of jail for the next show, I'm sure. I'm David Black. Thank you for listening. Hope you'll join us again for the next netcast of Weather Brains. Weather Brains, copyright 2007. All rights reserved. Adios. Interesting show, guys. Enjoyed it.
Good job, guys.
Thank you, guys. Had fun.
Me too. I wonder if I might just take a moment to mention the online survey.
What's that online survey about, Kev?
Oh, did you not hear about that?
No, tell me about that.
Listener survey, just a few questions so we can help make the show a little better. It's at weatherbrains.com.
And I can just find a link there on the page, right?
Right there on the weatherbrains.com. There'll be a link. You can fill out the form. Took my wife a minute and 27 seconds. I don't think I mentioned that, did I?
I'm heading there shortly.
I predict 50,000 replies.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks, guys.
You guys take it easy.
Take care.
Okay.